Hallo und herzlich willkommen zum zweiten Podcast der Comic Invasion Berlin. In dieser Sendung sprechen wir mit Ellie Fitzgerald. Sie ist in Berlin lebende amerikanische Künstlerin und macht Comic-Workshops für Geflüchtete. Ich bin Carlos und neben mir sitzt Lara. Hallo Lara.
Hallo.
Und hi Ellie.
Hi.
Ja, wir werden mit Ellie gleich auf Englisch reden, aber vorher auf Deutsch noch einige Comic Invasion News und hinterher wieder einige Veranstaltungshinweise. Comic Events in Berlin in der nächsten Zeit. So, was geht ab bei der Comic Invasion? Der Wettbewerb hat gestartet, richtig?
Ja, Marc hat ja letztes Mal schon ein bisschen was davon erzählt. Das Thema ist dieses Mal Auf und Davon, Up, Up and Away heißt es, glaube ich, auf Englisch. Bezieht sich natürlich auch auf Refugees, aber nicht nur, ist sehr offen. Und da kann man jetzt seine Sachen einreichen bis Mitte März.
Bis zum 11. März kann man da seine Sachen einreichen.
Man kann gewinnen.
Genau, was kann man denn gewinnen?
Man kann gewinnen, was man da einreicht, wenn man gewinnt, wird als Buch publiziert, auch auf der Invasion schon vorgestellt. Und man kriegt natürlich auch Space auf der Invasion. Und
like a mentorship? Or like
mentoring.
Genau.
Exactly. Genau, da ist, es gibt ein... Wie heißt das auf Deutsch? Ein Comic-Stipendium. Ein Comic-Stipendium mit finanzieller Hilfe und Mentoring für ein eigenes Comic-Projekt. Das ist doch eine schöne Sache. Also, ja, da kann jeder und jede mitmachen. Also, egal wie groß, wie klein, wie erfahren, einfach mal probieren. Es gibt, ihr müsst auf die Website schauen, es gibt da bestimmte Anforderungen an das Format und an die Länge wahrscheinlich auch. Das wird es dann auf der Invasion wieder in so einem Heftchen geben. So, nächster Punkt.
Die Tische sind jetzt zu bestellen. Man kann jetzt offiziell sich anmelden für halbe oder ganze Tische.
Wie funktioniert das? Da gibt es so ein Webformular, da kann man sich einklicken, ne?
Genau, da gibt es ein Webformular. Es wurde vorher über die offizielle Facebook-Gruppe auch gefragt, wie Preise sein sollen, ob das so vom letzten Jahr sein soll, ob es ein bisschen teurer sein kann, um die Organizer ein bisschen zu bezahlen, und es bleibt auf dem Niveau vom letzten Mal. Und dann einfach über das Webformular auf der Seite kann man sich anmelden und kriegt dann Feedback.
Genau. Außerdem gibt es jetzt...
Man kann jetzt auch Satellites-Events anmelden, sich ausdenken und einreichen. Satelliten-Events sind ja die vor der Invasion schon passieren, um dahin hinzuführen. Können Ausstellungen sein, können Lesungen sein. Ab jetzt könnt ihr eure Ideen einfach eintragen.
Genau. Damit wir dann auch ein schönes Rahmenprogramm wieder haben werden dieses Jahr. Das geht los dann irgendwie Anfang April wahrscheinlich, ne?
Ab 1. April, genau.
Okay, gut. Damit haben wir alles, ne? So die wichtigsten News, Verkündigungen. Ja, okay. Gut, dann wechseln wir jetzt zu Englisch und we're switching to English now and start with our guest. Ellie Fitzgerald, you are an American artist in Berlin?
Yeah, like a lot of people, yeah.
Introduce yourself a little bit. What are you doing in Berlin?
Well, I mean, I guess I do a lot of things. Right now I do mostly comics. I do two regular comics. One's called Hungover Bear and Friends, and it's for McSweeney's in America. And the other one is Art Zombies for Art Magazine and in Hamburg. And besides that, I do lots of drawings, and I sometimes write about art, and I teach. Yeah, that's it.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, what's your art background?
Sure. Well, my mom was in the Navy, so I grew up kind of all over the States, and so I'm not actually from one place. So that question's always much more complicated to explain, I guess. Yeah, and then before I moved here, I was living in Texas, where I went to graduate school in Austin, and I studied painting. Before that, I went to a liberal arts college and studied creative writing and some other things. And during that time, I kind of wanted to be maybe a comic artist. Actually, I wanted to do like newspaper comics, you know, like Peanuts. Yeah. And I know, it was sweet. And I even had my own comic in my university paper called Patent Sweater. That was the name. And I kind of wanted to... I came a little bit close to getting syndicated, even though the whole system kind of collapsed in a way. But and then I went to graduate school, and I started to engage more with, like, high art. I'm like putting quotation marks there. And started doing paintings and installations and yeah, and then I didn't really do comics for a while until I moved to Berlin, which was 7 years ago. And then I was kind of burnt out on this whole art scene, and then I just started doing more comics and writing. Yeah, I mean, it took me a long time, I think, actually, to get back into it and to figure out. I had to sort of, like, teach myself in a way, because I'd become, I think, pretty good at painting, but actually, like, learning how to tell stories and how to draw, like, in an intricate way isn't something that actually came so naturally to me, because I like to draw big and gesturally. So I kind of had to learn that along the way.
What brought you to Berlin? Was it just, yeah, that's an interesting city, let's check it out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a lot of different things. Actually, my friend Sally, who I just ran into 5 minutes ago on the street, we've talked about this before, how sometimes Berlin is kind of a last stop for American expats who are just a little too burnt out. And they're kind of like done, and they maybe want, I don't know, they want to live a certain way that maybe is difficult in America. But I mean, maybe it was partly that. When I was younger, I really liked like Cabaret and Christopher Isherwood's stories, and I kind of thought of Berlin as a very queer place, which appealed to me very much at the time, and still does. But that was part of it. I think the queerness and the art scene, then the fact that I could have both and I could escape maybe some things, all of those were reasons why I came. But I never planned to stay so long, I think. I think I came during I was working as a professor at the University of Texas, and I was really quite young, and I think I was living a life that maybe was like a little bit too old for my age. And then I came during a break, and I said that if it worked, I would stay 3 months, and then, you know, I got my visa, and then I just kept staying, and now I'm still here.
Okay. So before we talk about the refugee comic project, how did you come into contact with the comic invasion?
Well, Mark just approached me, actually, after he saw the comic that was published in Vox. He wrote me and he said that he was trying to figure out a way for Comic Invasion to be involved in some way in helping the situation. Because I think it was also, at the time, it was like the summer where the situation was especially critical, and I think everybody was kind of like, you know, we all need to do something, and yeah. And Mark read my comic and thought it sounded cool, and so wanted to know how it could be done on a larger scale. And then we met sometimes, and yeah.
You wasn't involved in Comic Invasion before?
Not really, no. But I mean, I helped out my friend Saroja Kolo last year. She was doing a workshop with women. I'm trying to remember what it was. I mean, it's called Heldinnen gesucht, and yeah, and we did like a little workshop there last year, but I wasn't officially involved in Comic Invasion or anything. Yeah.
And now you're doing comic workshops with refugees. That's quite an interesting project. How did this happen? What was your idea behind this?
Yeah, well, actually, the same thing, the Heldinnen gesucht project. We had a table at 48 Hours Neukölln, and then the director of a refugee shelter approached me and said, like, could you maybe do, you know, workshops with young, I think he thought, like, maybe male refugees that were teens initially. And I was like, yeah, that would work. It was definitely the opposite of what we were going for there. But actually, the idea really appealed to me because I mean, for a lot of really maybe lofty reasons, which is that, like, I think that, you know, art and art making is really, you know, like, can help you communicate and all of these things. I guess we'll talk about a bit later, but yeah, it appealed to me also, like, as a challenge and as something that, you know, I could do to help. And so yeah, so he approached me really with more of that idea, and then I kind of devised a little bit a way of doing it. But like, when I got there, it was all kind of like thrown out the window, because it's really difficult to prepare under those circumstances, because the shelter is really just like one big kind of balloon, you know, so you never really know who's coming. And yeah, but the first workshop was really, really great. It was actually, it was mostly teens, sort of split between Afghanistan and Syria. Okay. And yeah, and we just made some comics, and it was fun.
But how
do you start such a thing? I mean, I guess you don't just walk in and say, hi, let's make comics.
Well, I mean, it depends on the day and it depends on me too. Like that day, I remember I went in thinking actually that people would know a little bit more about comics than they actually did. And so I remember, I don't know, like saying things about like, trying to come up with examples like The Simpsons or I don't know, I don't remember what else, but they didn't have any idea until I talked about Tom and Jerry and SpongeBob SquarePants. And those are, yeah, those are like the two points of reference. And then I drew like SpongeBob on the board. And over time, I found that that's actually a really good method to get them to engage, is to draw on the board. And, but the idea of comics as a form is pretty, almost completely foreign to, I would say, almost all of them. Mm-hmm. So I usually bring in examples. I mean, I brought in examples that day too. Yeah, and anyway, the workshops have kind of evolved, but that's how I started and how I tend to start. Usually trying with like some sort of interactive thing where I draw on the board or we draw each other or something like that.
Okay, and what exactly are you doing there? I mean, I imagine that's a table and paper and pens and stuff, and but how does it work? So are you talking a lot, or is it more like the people sitting there and drawing? And
yeah, it really depends. It's a strange thing to describe because literally every class is different. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, yes, I talk a lot, although I would say that's kind of rare for me to talk a lot because also it doesn't make sense when most people don't share that common verbal language. Mm. I don't think it makes a lot of sense for me to talk a lot. But I do try to talk, and I also try to, I think that the more interesting thing for me has been that the fact that I'm also, you know, not to brag, but I'm really quite skilled like drawing wise and I can do it really quickly. So for me, that's been the most helpful thing, is that I actually can draw what I mean instead of saying it, which in some ways, you know, as a like shy teenager would have been like my preferred mode of communication, period, you know. So it's actually kind of nice to be able to do that with people. And then, you know, sometimes like one day we had this class where nobody talked, and it was actually really beautiful. It was like they were mostly from Afghanistan, and then this one like guy from Pakistan, and he was singing like traditional Pakistani songs, and we just all drew for like 2 hours and nobody talked to anybody. And we mostly drew like, you know, trees, and I think the guy who was singing, he was actually really, really talented, and he drew some from I brought in Max and Where the Wild Things Are, and he drew a couple panels from that, mm-hmm. but like altered them and made them really like more jungle like, mm-hmm. and yeah, so that's an example that like that class was really interesting to me, but we barely spoke. And then other classes, you know, I will speak more. Just depends.
Yeah. And at the end of each workshop, how do you like conclude the thing? Do you talk then, or what? How do you end these things?
Mm-hmm, yeah, that's a really good question. Usually, I just say, you know, we're done. I have to go, or you know, it also depends. I try not to. I try not to cut it off too early. I mean, if they're really in the middle of a drawing and I think they're into it, then I probably will just like let them finish the drawing before I leave. So I guess I try to end it organically, and also maybe, you know, sometimes I'll end it early too if a lot of people are finished or seeming disinterested instead of starting on something else. I think it's good to end it when people like feel like it should end a little bit. Yeah. I mean, generally that's what I've learned. It's like, at least in this specific shelter, because it's completely open, there's not a separate room, and people come and go, like, as I'm doing this, it doesn't make as much sense to have it structured in a really strict way. Whereas I think in other cases, you know, and, like, when I come back from the States, where I'm going for a few weeks, you know, maybe in the future I'll do it at other shelters that have a separate room, and they have people already that are there, and then that demands a little more structure, I think. But as it is currently, I kind of have to just play it by ear, you know, like see how each class goes.
And what do you do with the drawings themselves? Do you show them around to each and every one, and then you keep it, or how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I do try to show all the drawings. to the others. And I think it's, you know, it's a really sweet moment too when they're all really appreciative of each other's drawings. And I think that's really, you know, maybe selfishly satisfying for me, is like seeing the look on their face when they get a little bit of like acclaim from everybody else, when people are like, oh, that's a great drawing. You know, I think it's like just a small moment of like power and agency for people who actually have none or haven't had any. And that's like a really nice thing. So I think that's actually an important part of the process, is to show the drawings, to get some positive feedback, to make them feel like they can do stuff. Yeah, what was the other question? Oh, what do I do with the drawings? Cool. And then at the end, I always ask them, because I don't want to feel like I'm exploiting people either. I always say, you know, do you want this drawing? And yeah, and I say, like, you should keep it. And we have this, like, back and forth. And 99% of the time, they give me the drawing. They're like, no, you have the drawing. And so then I take it home. I have, like, a big box. And then I put them there. Because if I leave it at the shelter, then it usually gets kind of ruined. So, yeah.
Was there an exhibition or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was an exhibition, actually, that Mark sort of helped organize with Jana Kreisel, also, I should say. And, yeah, that was with Amnesty International in December in Mitte with the Neue Schule für Photography. And, yeah, that was great. It was just, we just showed their original drawings and then some photos of the workshop and the my comics of their comics. Yeah, and it went well. I mean, I don't have any concrete plans to show the drawings in the future, although I think that would be interesting. I think it would be interesting to make them into a book. But yeah, I've been super busy. I have all these ideas, but it's a little hard sometimes to like make them come together, which is why it's good to have Mark and Comic Invasion and doing these things too. Oops. I mean, for me personally, it's also interesting to like record it in comic form. Like, that's also something that I'm as interested as I am in the comic workshops, which offer a lot of different satisfying moments and connections with people. Like, for me, it's also interesting to talk to people, learn their stories, and I'd like to make more comics about that and for myself, and, you know, to also tell people's stories and get it out there in a different way. So I think it's an interesting project, I think, in that it's interconnected and complicated because there's all these different sides. And then, like I said, it's hard to also to navigate, you know, how not to exploit people, to respect them and their drawings and their personhood, and to tell those stories responsibly. And it's a lot, though.
A lot of stuff. And what are the people drawing? What kind of stuff do you see there?
I mean, there are like some patterns, but there's a really wide variety of things that they draw. But actually today I was thinking, I saw a little girl draw, because I did the workshop today. She was from Syria, I think, and she drew a tree. And I've seen a lot of Syrian people draw this tree in the same way. It's sort of like, I feel like maybe people in America draw a tree that's kind of like either like that evergreen tree, you know, I'm making a hand gesture that you can't see. maybe like pyramidal, or you have that like really round tree. And then a lot of people from Syria draw this kind of tree that's, I don't know, it looks to me like almost like the way these sort of like oriental tapestries used to have trees. But so there are these specific things. Okay, so a lot of people draw trees and flowers. And also in these really lyrical, interesting ways. And people draw their homes. Sometimes they draw like specific memories, you know, trauma, stuff like that, obviously. Scenes of like tanks or weapons. You know, sometimes the kids have drawn weapons in like a really specific way that's kind of frightening. What else? Like the other day, this guy drew this really beautiful tree that was also like a map of Syria, which was really interesting. And he had previously drawn this like book that had all like the symbols of different religions and this hand coming out of it. And so he was like really interested in symbolism.
Do they also tell stories with it, or is it just like one picture at a time?
Oh yeah, like whether it's panels or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends. Like if I'm giving a more structured lesson and it's more like comic specific, then I'll do the multi-paneled ones. But it's hard to get them to that point, so I think it like takes a bit of time. So I have these like sometimes these templates that I use that are multi-paneled, and it'll be like my favorite food memories or something, and then they like draw these different foods or their different memories, or people I love, and then it's like inside a heart. It's like then they're sort of like, you know, they're automatically telling stories with this. So I have a couple of things that I use like that, but generally, especially not lately, I haven't really been doing the multi-paneled thing just because of it's been such a loose... I've also been in and out the last few months. But sometimes, you know, and then I have them draw the panels and we talk about a specific thing. But I would say more of the time I just kind of like let them draw what they want, which is usually not in panels.
Did you had any expectations that turned out completely different in the workshops?
Oh yeah, like plenty, I think. I mean, I don't know, actually, maybe I went into it without so many expectations because it was so foreign to me, but I mean, one of them I already talked about, that I thought maybe people would know the comic form a little bit better because it is part of our popular like consciousness, you know, as Westerners, I think, and it's not really appear to be the same. You know, I learned a lot about like which languages are spoken where, or
How do you communicate there? You said with drawings, but otherwise?
Well, a lot of it really is with pictures, and then a lot of times I will have like a helper or assistant. I've been like quite lucky that there's always been one person in the shelter, although I mean I say lucky, but I always try to find that person. The person who speaks really good English. I think all three, I've had like three kind of assistants, and they've all been Syrian. They were really nice. Mustafa, who was at the, two of them were at that amnesty show. So Mustafa is from Aleppo, and he was really great. His English was amazing. He learned it actually completely from pop songs, which I thought was just sort of amazing. Yeah, I've learned a lot about Syria, for instance. Tarek was the next guy who helped me, and then Maharus is the guy who's helping me now. And they all speak great English, and then they translate usually into Arabic. A lot of people speak Turkish too, because a lot of the families spend some time in Turkey. So those are probably the two most spoken languages. But then obviously there's Farsi, and then what else?
A lot of languages there that are very different, no? Right?
Yeah. But I guess it surprised me that Turkish is actually basically the language that most people understand, I would say. And maybe also because I think Turkic languages are spoken in Iraq, and so some people who are from that region also speak kind of Turkish, and some Turkish is spoken in Syria, and so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe... I wish I spoke Turkish. Then it would be easier.
Mm-hmm. So you have been to various shelters. Do you also come back to ones you have visited before, and how is that then? You don't have to start from scratch again, but... Mm-hmm. How is that if you come back?
Right. Actually, I only do it at one shelter. Yeah. I come back, but there's still not a lot of continuity because people come in and out. I mean, in the beginning, this is actually interesting, when I started in July, this was before, I think, like, really it was such a massive crisis, but when I started in July, people were only staying maybe 3 or 4 weeks, so I would really only see them once. And this is an emergency shelter also, I should mention. And so I would only see them once, and there was never a time to see them again. But then as I've been there, now people who are there stay up to like 7 months. So it's a very different situation. So I have had some chances to work with people more than once. Like right now there's a really sweet 13-year-old girl named Rama who's really good at, she's Syrian. She's really good at drawing, and she also does maybe more like a comic. Like her things are a little bit more narrative oriented. Yeah, so then you get the chance to like work with some people, but it's also like hard to catch people because you obviously their schedules are really like at the whim of like bureaucracy, right? So they have appointments and you never know if they're going to be there or not. So it's not like I have like a regular crew that like I do this with. Yeah, every week is sort of a new group.
Is it hard to create relationships in this environment?
No, I would say actually the relationships happen really quickly, I think, which is very nice. We exchange emails and, I find the relationships are actually really, they come quicker maybe because of the nature of the circumstances. But actually one difficult thing is that happens and then you know they're leaving, or they leave without you even getting a chance to say goodbye, because they leave and nobody you know, new. And yeah, so that's sort of a difficulty, I would say. I mean, for me, not maybe not as much for them, but...
Okay, some things left we have to mention about the project.
Oh, is there anything that I want to say?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
Have you shown them Miss Marvel?
Miss Marvel? No, I haven't. That's a good one, actually. She's where's like her? Where's she from again?
I think her parents are from Pakistan, so it's not completely the same. But at least she's a person of color with a hijab or something.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just.
Yeah, that's a good idea. This is one thing also, when I get back, I hope to work on a bit more, you know, getting these kind of like, getting a bit more material for the workshops that they can relate to in a way. I mean, one interesting thing is actually I showed, which I found, maybe you were mentioning surprises before, I showed Tarek, who was my assistant, I had him read Persepolis, and he's from Syria. He had this like this take on it, which I had to respect, which is that like in the book, I don't know if you remember the second one, but she kind of like loses her virginity in Austria, and he was sort of like, well, like I don't think, he was like, in my culture, I just, you know, she might have like maintained her virginity, and I don't think maybe you should be telling me that like you should have, or like this book shouldn't be saying that you should have to change that aspect of your culture to like assimilate into some sort of European idea of. Whatever, like sexual freedom, and I thought that was like a really interesting thing that I wouldn't have really thought about. Yeah, but so yeah.
Have you changed something? Have you learned that something doesn't work and you have to do it another way and all stuff like this?
Oh yeah, I mean I've learned a lot of that. For instance, one time I brought in a Charles Burns book. I think it was X'd Out or the one that followed that, and. These young girls were like giggling over it and like holding on to it, and then some people saw it and we realized that they were looking at this page that was like a naked woman, and like, you know, I realized that maybe that was culturally inappropriate, and so yeah, stuff like that I feel like has happened quite a lot. But I think everybody's kind of so really so lovely. I really haven't had any bad experiences. Nobody's ever been a jerk to me, really. So. Even though stuff like that has happened, I think everybody has a certain amount of respect for each other and respect for each other's cultures and kind of like an openness that is nice and maybe also surprising for some people who might think differently, you know, but it's not like, I think, you know, the people who are there are respectful of, yeah, like each other and each other's cultures, so for the most part.
Do you have... any more plans in this context for the project?
I have my own personal plans, which is that I have a lot of stories that I would like to tell in comic form myself. Like I said, I'd like to make a small book of their drawings. I'd like to just keep working with them on a personal level. I kind of hope, although I haven't confirmed this, to work with the new LGBTI center in Berlin for refugees. It just started. I actually don't know if there's a name for it. Anyway. Yeah, and so that would be cool. I think that would be really cool to do it there as well. There's my only plans at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Dann wechseln wir jetzt zurück zu Deutsch und haben jetzt noch ein paar Veranstaltungshinweise für euch.
Was jetzt schon läuft, aber noch bis Mitte Juni läuft, ist im Schwulen Museum die Super Queeros Ausstellung. Die ist richtig gut. Die könnt ihr euch anschauen.
Genau, und am 26. Februar liest Ulla Loge aus ihrem Buch »Da wird sich nie was ändern«. Und das findet statt in der Buchhandlung Montag. Und dann gibt es noch eine Buchvorstellung von Marcin Podulec. Ich hoffe, ich habe das jetzt richtig ausgesprochen, bestimmt nicht. Sein Buch heißt Fugazi Music Club. Und da geht es um einen Club in Warschau in den 90er Jahren. Und im Anschluss signiert der Künstler und es wird die passende Musik der Zeit des Fugazi Club aufgelegt. Na also, findet statt am Dienstag, dem 23. Februar in der Buchhandlung Uslar und Rai in der Schönhauser Allee in Prenzlauer Berg. Ja, und dann gibt es auch noch eine Ausstellung finnischer Künstler und Künstlerinnen im Vierraumladen vom 26.02. bis zum 4.03.
Die Ausstellung ist ein subjektiver Querschnitt durch die finnische Comic-Szene. Dabei sind drei Finnen und drei Finninnen sowie ein Ex-Berliner Halbfinne. Dabei sind, oh je, finnische Namen vorlesen. Das erspare ich euch jetzt lieber. Deswegen geht ihr einfach dann mal selber gucken. Berlin Suo Mix, finnische Berlin Comics vom 26. Februar bis zum 4. März im Vierraumladen. Das war die zweite Sendung zur Comic Invasion Berlin. Und
immer noch dabei sein, wenn ihr in den nächsten Episoden dabei sein wollt, schreibt uns eine E-Mail an comicinvasionpodcast@gmail.com oder auf kontaktiert uns über Twitter. Seid dabei und ansonsten see you at a Comic Invasion Berlin.
Genau, bis dann. We'll be right back.